You can see purple if you've been by the church this week. Past 2 days or so, you've seen that we have purple lights. It's not a Halloween thing we're getting ready for. All right, so if you went through, if you worried about that, you don't worry. We are supporting Talbot Goes Purple. Talbot Goes Purple. It is about opioid awareness. If you don't know about it, you can go to talbotgoespurple.org. There is a link to it on the YouVersion app as well as the Oasis Easton app you can go to where you can read up about things. But there's a couple of big events that are happening. One, people are just asked to wear some purple. So Pam and I, we just wanted to match today. And, we wore purple. I like purple, but I am doing it to remind people of what is going on. So here's a couple of big events. First, or here's like what you can do. Do you realize there's a problem with opioids? Do you really realize? So I want to give my personal testimony. I can't keep track of time. 4 or 5 years ago, got diagnosed with kidney disease. I had to wear a stent. I had to wear one. Sorry, nurses and doctors in the room. I had a stent put into my kidney and my bladder, and when they removed it, it caused a significant amount of pain. They gave me a big old thing, bigger than this, of oxycodone. And I was very diligent to not take anywhere near what was said of me to take. I was pretty, I was proud of myself for doing so. I was like, I really just worked it out. And so what began to happen is, and there's a couple of stories here, is one, I began to shake. My hands began to shake. And I remember, I don't know if Miss Robin here, I know I see Matt and others here, but I was in the well, which is behind here, and I was telling her my predicament, and I'm shaking, and I was thinking it might be some nerve damage because everything else was hurting. And she looked right at me. She said, "What are you taking medication-wise?" And I was like, "Well, I'm taking this stuff, but I'm not taking anywhere near the amount." She says, "Try to stop." She was great about it. She was like, my Robin. I mean, she took care of me. And so literally and I had just read about West Virginia where there was a whole town that was literally almost strung out on opioids. And so I had one like it sitting by my bed. And when I was going to take it, I didn't. And I was up half the night staring at it. And I mean, I was nowhere near the level of stuff. And I just looked at it and I'm like, I knew if I took one that I'd go right to sleep. And that was sleep's a good thing for me. It's a love language. I don't know, this is a seventh love language. Six, there's food and then there's sleep. But sleep is good for me. And I stayed up most of the night, but then I didn't take it anymore. But here's the deal. That was a little thing for me, a little bit. But what I didn't realize also, what I learned with Sheriff Gamble and the chief in St. Michael's is that bit of medication I had, which literally had 48 tablets in a bit, they were like, the doctor looked at me and said, "That's worth $20 a piece on the street." And I'm like, that's stupid. Because I had taken one and I didn't like get all jazzed up about it. It's not like I was walking around with all, it's like that. But I was like, I just sort of dismissed it. But what I didn't realize is that one of those tablets can be ground up and used in many different ways and totally get people jacked up. And it is a sort of a gateway to taking heroin. And I'm like, no way. And they made one thing. So if you want to do one thing about it, I'm just going to throw a couple taglines. 91 people die every day from a heroin or prescription painkiller overdose. I don't know how many we lost in a hurricane, but 91 a day. 2, if you want to do something, lock up your prescription medications. So what I have done when I had my knee surgery in the end of December is I have a whole thing, I think it's called a Vicodin, something like that, or it's a type of it. I normally left my medication up in my kitchen, by the sink, up in the bathroom, by my bed, and I would take it with me to a hotel. When I'd go to a hotel and I'd leave it out. What I have now realized, and there was one time I thought I was missing some stuff, that people will go through your house, will go through, people who are cleaning your room, will go through your prescriptions in a hotel to get their fix on opioids. So now I lock up, I have like a safe that I put the one thing that's in our house that I know of that can be addictive in there, and I lock it away. If you want to do something real that will really help, you will go through your house today, if you haven't already, I know a lot of people are already up on this, and you will take that medication and you will put it away. You'll just put it away. And I mean lock it up. Because your kids' friends can be in the house, and they will go through, hey, can I go to the bathroom? And they're getting through your medicine cabinet. Now, I've done it. Have any of y'all left stuff in the medicine cabinet trusting? Am I the only one? Am I the only foolish one in this room? Just didn't think about it. I trust my kids, not worried about it. But we cannot live like that anymore. People are dying. More than 7% of Midshore high school students, think about this, 7 out of every 100 kids have tried heroin at least once. My story, prescription painkiller dependency can happen at recommended doses or less than recommended. Nearly half of all opioid overdose deaths involve a prescription painkiller. Nearly half of the deaths. You think, I've thought, you know, you go and you buy this, you know, liquid and you go in the needle and it's all shady, but this is half of the problem right here. If you want to fight the problem, you'll take care of this. And let me say, too, that you will watch yourself on this. That you will be accountable to somebody on this. My wife knew where it was. She knew what I was taking. She could look anytime and see. Now, it'd be different because it's all locked up and I'm not taking it. But here's the other thing. When you go to a doctor, if you've had a surgery or something, say, do I need this? Now, that's counterintuitive for me because I don't like pain, right? I'm like, I'll take everything. But you need to say, is it worthwhile for me to start up an addictive behavior or have something dangerous in the house because of it? Just be thinking about that. So on the 19th of September, which is a Tuesday night, at 5:30 at the gazebo in the Ottawa Park, 5:30 p.m., there's going to be a prayer walk. Multiple churches, part of Shore Mosaic. The pastor, the new pastor at Union Baptist Church, who is a solid Jesus lover, he's going to lead us in prayer, and we're going to walk down to the high school where at 7 p.m., Chris Herron is going to speak. He is a former NBA player who got hooked on opioids, and he's going to share his story. I haven't heard him personally, but everyone I've talked to says he's an amazing speaker and his story is captivating. So what can you do? You can go and walk with multiple churches and pray. You can go and bring your kids and your grandkids and their friends. Maybe you can just go be informed about what is going on in our community. It is affecting every area of our community. So that is happening on the 19th. Small things you can do is obviously you can put a purple light bulb at your house just to show it's your part, or if you want to wear purple, feel free to do so. But so you got a hurricane, you got opioid addictions, you've got, Korea's setting off nuclear bombs, and in this room right now, there are some pains and there are some hurts that are overtaking some of us. And what we tend to do, I'm not saying we are doing it, not everyone, but we tend to go and act like everything's okay. Or act like the opioid addiction's not my problem. Or the hurricane is not my problem. The cancer is not my problem. Until it comes closer. So I want to take you through very briefly, and we're going to do something different at the end, starting with Exodus 32. It's on the app. You can obviously open a Bible, Exodus chapter 32. I am going to fly through this a bit. Moses was up on the mountain. He was getting the Ten Commandments. God had just freed all of the Israelite people after the plagues, the 10 plagues that happened in Egypt, right? And we think about those, right? The 10 plagues. Yeah, we know the gnats and the blood. But did you know that the plagues each represented a god of Egypt? Did you recognize that? So each of those plagues, and I think I've attached this document to the app, each of those plagues represents 10 Egyptian gods and goddesses in the Bible, or in their culture. So the plagues weren't just like God just randomly going to do 10 things. Well, this doesn't work, so I'm going to try number two. Oh, shoot. Can you see this God up there scratching his head? I'm going to do this plague now, the frogs. I mean, that's grossed me out. You know, I'm going to try that. Oh, you know what? What would get them? I'm going to turn the Nile into blood. Maybe that'll work. No, God did these things because he was attacking the idols, the gods and the goddesses of the Egyptian people. Just a few examples. I'm not going to read them all. And I'm probably not going to pronounce these right. Hapi, the Egyptian god of the Nile, he was known as their water bearer. So the plague where the water turned into blood was a direct repudiation from God, the creator, against the false gods of the Egyptian people. Two, Heket, the Egyptian goddess of fertility, water and renewal. She was often shown and had the head of a frog. So you had the frogs coming from the Nile River. You had Geb, the Egyptian god of the earth. So you had the plague of lice from the dust of the earth. So you see what I'm saying? So each of these things, and the last one culminated with their god represented on this earth, the Pharaoh, saying, we're going to take the firstborn child of every house. So God had a plan here. So they had been released. They had seen the river opened up. They had seen the Egyptians come in. They had feared for their life. They had gone in. They had celebrated and built a tabernacle up there, praising God and saying, look what God has done. He has freed us. Then Moses goes up on a mountain for 40 days where he is communing with God, representing there's a tabernacle up there for the people. And the people down on the ground begin to murmur, begin to complain, begin to go, well, maybe God killed Moses. Maybe he's not coming down. Maybe he lost grip on one of the rocks. Maybe it's over. And what happened, you'll see in Exodus 32:1, we're going to read, when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, make us gods whom shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who has brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So Aaron said to them, take off the rings of gold that are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people took off their rings of gold that were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and listen to this, and fashioned it with a graving tool and made a golden calf. So Aaron was culpable in this incident. You're going to see what he's going to say later. And they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. They're excited. We have a God we can worship. It's the God of the lamp. Isn't this great? I can see it, I can hold it, and I can, watch me get on fire, I can snuff it out if I want to. We like that. Remember what the Israelites did later? They wanted a king. God said, I'm your king. And what did they do? No, we want a king. And so they get Saul because he was strong and mighty. And we know, most of us probably know how that worked out. Verse 6, and they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, go down, for your people whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. God has got a sense of humor. Go down because your people, right? And he said, they've corrupted themselves. If you want to circle that, it's a presupposition I have. We corrupt ourselves. Many of us want to blame God or blame our circumstances or blame the devil, but in most cases, we do things that we walk into and we ask that the calf be built for us, and we worship things that are idols to us because we tend to, because of our sin nature, we want to corrupt ourselves. Some of you might argue that. I don't want to corrupt myself. I don't use opioids. We're going to get into that in a little bit. Verse 8, they have turned aside quickly out of the way that I commanded them. They have made for themselves a golden calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed it. These are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, in order that I might make a great nation of you. God was getting ready to just level the playing field. This is a hard thing for somebody, but God is holy. He is also just, and at the same time, he's merciful. But look at the interaction with him. But Moses implored the Lord his God and said, O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say, with evil intent did he bring them out to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from your burning anger and relent from this disaster against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven. And all this land that I have promised, I will give to you for your offspring, and they shall inherit it forever. Verse 14, and the Lord relented. The Lord relented. Some of you, maybe like me, think you're too big a sinner to ask things of God, to knock on the door of God and to lay deep into his things and say, God, relent. Maybe you think you're not big enough or good enough or in the position you should be, and Moses was a sinner just like us. Matter of fact, God knew that because of his sin, he would not be able to take the people over into the promised land, but he pled for his people. So here's my proposition to you. Can we as a church rise up, shake the dust off, it talks about this in Isaiah, and begin to plead for the community that we live in? To plead with God that he relents his anger. Instead of focusing and assuming anger that you have for people, saying, I am a sinner just like them. God, would you relent from me and from them? Are we going to rise up as a church? Are we going to love our community? Are we going to shut the doors and just hold our Bibles tight and pray for the second coming? God did not put us on this earth to wait for his return and do nothing. He has called us as warriors to rise up. He has called us to proclaim the good news. And some of you go, I don't even know how to proclaim it, because it is not good news to you. It is a shallow how kind of news. It doesn't penetrate the root and the heart of you, because all the circumstances come and you look to somebody and say, let's build a calf. Let's build a calf. Let's worship something else. Let's worship the God of money. Let's build a calf. Let's worship the God of greed. Let's worship the God of opioids. Let's worship the God of fun and relaxation. Let's worship the God of you name your thing. Because some of us in this room, I am quite sure, just because of sheer numbers, look aside to people who have been using heroin and go, they did it to themselves. And you sit there, and I mean, maybe this is not some of you. Maybe this is a perfect room. And so if it's just let it roll over, I'm not accusing you. But I'm pushing, right? I'm your friend. I'm pushing. Do you put yourself on the high horse and go, I would never do that? They're getting exactly what they deserve. Moses didn't do that, did he? I want to say if I was Moses, I'd have gone mow him down. If I'd have known that foolishness. If you don't know me, I'm sort of kidding. Notice sort of. I'd have been like, check, done. But Moses realized he had a calling that was greater. And so we're flushed up in our circumstances. We're flooded, to use recent terminology, with our situation and our introspection, that we are not stepping out of the darkness and into the darkness and becoming light, because our light is hid under a bushel and we're afraid someone might accuse us of something. Yeah, maybe they'll just, they love Jesus too much. What a great proclamation if they were to say of Oasis, that church loves Jesus too much. Wouldn't that be great? What a testimony. They're just too much Jesus loving for me there. So Moses reminded God, and it's not like God needed reminding, but God gives us his promises, and he wants us to put them in our heart, and he wants us to share them and actually believe them. And there is nothing wrong with reminding him, God, you've promised this, and I want to be obedient to it. And the Lord relented from the disaster that he had spoken of bringing on his people. Verse 15, then Moses turned and went down from the mountain with the two tablets on the testimony in his land. Tablets that are written on both sides, and on the front and on the back, these were written. He just came down. I can't believe the time. Do you see, if you have your Bibles, open Isaiah 58. It's in the app. Isaiah 58. If you don't know, this is the chapter where Oasis was birthed out of. I want you to read this with me. Verse 6, just in your head. Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of wickedness, undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke, break every chain, however you want to say it. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh. Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you shall call and the Lord will answer. You shall cry and he will say, here I am. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking of witness, and the speaking, someone finish that for me. Speaking of what, my voice cannot do that today for whatever reason. We just think we have this access to God where everything's just got to be, we just pick up the phone. God, I need this and this and this. And my prayers have reflected that sometime. God, I just need this. Would you be there with me, et cetera, et cetera. Help my family, et cetera, et cetera. Amen. Anyone ever done that? Am I the only one, right? But God said, when you are busy about breaking people from their bondage and seeing God work, then he will listen. So we'll do something different. I've asked Herb to come up. I am going to challenge you right now. We're going to have a time of prayer for folks. So we can talk about all this and you can go, yeah! But until we do it, it gets into our heart and then it comes into our hands.